So tonight we're going to talk about the Four Noble Truths. And this was the Buddha's first teaching after he reached enlightenment. He didn't teach immediately after reaching enlightenment, but he was asked to teach by a few ascetics who had he had practiced with earlier on in his search for the meaning of life. And he had left them at some point and gone off on his own. And when they saw him again, they realized that something was dramatically different for him. And they said, you know, what have you learned? Will you teach us what you've learned? And initially he wasn't ready to, and they had to ask a few times, but he finally agreed to teach. And this was the first teaching that he offered. So knowing that there is suffering, understanding its causes, and that it can end is what the Four Noble Truths is about. And I feel like this is such an important time for this particular teaching. I don't know about you, but I certainly know an awful lot of people that feel very overwhelmed and exhausted by the pace of challenges or crises that are occurring. And it can feel like in our world today that we're just saturated in suffering, and it almost seems to come at us nonstop. And so I think it's an invitation for us to actually stop and try to turn toward the suffering and to begin to understand what is really going on. So not to just allow our sort of default patterns of reactivity to kick in, but to look deeply at trying to understand suffering. And the Buddha taught us that when we look directly at it and we begin to gain some perspective, and that we can learn to work more skillfully with it so that we stop our behavior of always trying to run from the inevitable pain and disappointments of life. And it allows us to learn to expand our compassion, both for ourselves and for others, which allows us to bring sort of care and healing to the world. So I think it's a good teaching to be really considering at this time in particular. And I encourage you to listen to different teachers teach about the Four Noble Truths. People will teach about it in slightly different fashion. And as we learn and grow in our own practice, it's good to kind of come back to it, and you'll hear things slightly differently because you're in a different place too. So we have a very short period of time to talk about the Four Noble Truths together, but there's a lot more that you can learn and dive deeper into if it intrigues you. So I've appreciated teachers who have approached the teaching describing it sort of like it's a prescription or it's medicine for helping our hearts. And we can look at the way that the Buddha structured this teaching almost like a physician would assess an illness and make a diagnosis. So I'll go more deeply into some of these points, but just kind of as a summary and overview, these are the four points that the Buddha talked about. He notices first the symptoms. He says there is suffering. And of course, this was both the shared experiences of illness, aging, and death that we all have, but also those daily moments of life that arise not as we would have wanted or expected. And second, he goes on to say there are some causes for these symptoms. There's causes that lead to the suffering. And these have to do with how we approach our life and how we relate to our experience. He said that the causes are craving and ignorance. And third, he says, there is a treatment for this. You can decrease and eliminate these symptoms. He said, there is a cessation of suffering, a way that we can work with our suffering that can ease the heart and reduce the suffering. And fourth, here's your prescription. There's a path to the end of suffering, the Noble Eightfold Path, and the wisdom teachings. So with this teaching, as with all the teachings of the Buddha, our task is really just to consider it, to check it out against our own experience, and not to just take the words on faith, but rather to work with it and see if the ideas that the Buddha has offered ring true in your own experience. So we get to test it out and kind of use our own lives and our own experience as our own laboratory. Carol and I and Kevin too will invite you to just use these teachings to check it out and see what it's like in your own experience. So the first noble truth is there is suffering. And the Pali word for suffering is dukkha. And the Buddha's teaching about this first noble truth was to know there is suffering, to look at it and to understand it better. And so he was referring not only to the kind of easy to identify suffering, if you will, like the physical suffering that we have, whether that's the, you know, acute or chronic pain in the body, the sensation of being too cold or too hot, feeling hunger, ways that we suffer when we, our body suffers when we're sick. So all the ways that our physical body can be uncomfortable or painful, as well as how we suffer emotionally. These were maybe the gross level of suffering, the suffering that's easy for us to identify in ourselves and others. It was referred to as the suffering of suffering. But he also speaks about the full range of stress and distress in life. So dukkha has many translations. The Buddha used words like grief, mourning, pain, anguish, and distress. And he taught us to practice with some very specific experiences. And so there's this list that I'll go through that he said, these are the ways that you should practice with trying to know and understand suffering. He mentions birth, aging, illness, and death. So these are common experiences for all of us as humans. And so he is telling us to work with these in a way to understand how suffering arises with these. He also mentions sorrow, grief, sadness, pain, and distress. He says, having to associate with things that we dislike. So watching for ourselves, like how does suffering come up when I have to associate with something that I dislike? Being separated from that which we love. So this could be people or places, perhaps animals. How do we see suffering coming up around that? Being separated from that which we love. And then he mentions not getting what we want. How do you see suffering come up for you when you don't get what you want? And finally, he says the five aggregates of clinging. We should work with the five aggregates of clinging to understand suffering. So the five aggregates of clinging are the body, feeling, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. Now, not that you're going to be able to recall all five of those, but I kind of use like the shorthand for me is to think of it as like this body-mind complex, everything about this body and mind together. So the physical body, the feelings, the perceptions, the mental formations, and consciousness, the body-mind complex. Just by virtue of being alive in this human body, our experience can be one of suffering. So this is referred to as the suffering of existence. And then he goes on to talk about the suffering of change. And this is that we don't want things to change. So we expect that things are going to last, that they'll stay the same, but this is not how our life unfolds. We age, we get ill, we lose friends, we get married, some of us get divorced, a pandemic arises, the Supreme Court changes. So the Buddha taught us about impermanence and how things are constantly changing. We have difficulty with this when things are going well for us or we experience something that brings us pleasure. We don't want that to stop or to change. And then we grasp at that. And by grasping at something that is not permanent, we are disappointed and sad to see that change. So he taught us to look directly at our experience in all these different ways, to know or understand suffering, to see it as suffering. This is the first noble truth, the truth of suffering. I was in a day long with Gil Fronsdale on Saturday. A couple of you here on the screen were in that as well, I know. And he spoke about the beauty of truthfulness. How when we look truthfully or accurately at what's happening, there's a kind of beauty in that. seeing things as they really are. And it made me think about this first noble truth, that when we recognize, oh, this is happening, oh, this is actually suffering, that there's an element of beauty in seeing that as the truth, seeing that as how it is. For some people who were raised in families where maybe things weren't acknowledged, maybe sad things happened or traumatic things happened, and they just got swept under the rug and nobody ever talked about them, and nobody ever said, oh yeah, this is kind of what happens, and I understand your pain around that. It can really be a relief to hear somebody say, there is suffering. This is part of our experience, our human experience. So the beauty of truthfulness. I want to offer another word too that sometimes is used around the first noble truth, and that is unsatisfactoriness. You might hear some teachers talk about the first noble truth as unsatisfactoriness in life. And how does that show up for us in our life? How is life unsatisfactory? It's because nothing we experience is permanent. It's fleeting. It changes. As the Buddha taught us, it is impermanent. And we often search for something outside of ourselves, whether that's a relationship or the best next great job or a wonderful apartment or a terrific new car or this great vacation we're going to take. We think that these things will bring us happiness, but none of this brings us lasting happiness because they're all subject to change from our initial attraction to them or our attitude about them. So that wonderful partner who was amazing suddenly starts to do things that are annoying. The new car gets dented or scratched or goes out of style. That exotic trip is over so quickly. This is the suffering of change. And this unsatisfactoriness can almost be like this nagging feeling, like all the things that I've gained or attained or acquired in my life just aren't really making me feel a lasting happiness. So working with this idea of unsatisfactoriness and seeing how that shows up in your own experience. The second noble truth is the causes of suffering. So the Buddha taught that the causes of suffering are craving and ignorance. And his teaching was to abandon or let go of the causes. In Pali, the word for craving is tanha, which literally means thirst. So you can think about this craving as like a thirst or an unquenchable thirst. And in thinking about the diagnosis idea, here the Buddha is telling us that what's creating suffering is how we meet our experience, how we crave more of what we want and think will make us happy, and we push away that which we don't like or cannot face. And so with those things that we like or we want more of, we cling to these, wanting them to be permanent and enduring, not seeing them how they really are, which is continually shifting and changing. The Buddha talked about a couple of different ways that craving comes up for us. And the first is the craving of sensual pleasures. This might be the things that we can most easily relate to. This is things that we would understand of like eating delicious foods, enjoying comfortable clothing, having wonderful, the coziest bed you could possibly put together with the high thread count sheets and the wonderful pillows and everything, all those ways that we want those creature comforts, cuddly pets. And it's not that those things in and of themselves are problematic. It's our craving or our unquenchable thirst that causes suffering as we interact with those things. That first scoop or two of ice cream is really yummy, but if I eat the whole pint, suddenly my stomach is hurting. The thing that was spectacular turns into my own suffering. So this comes out about from our desire to feel good, and our thirst for something outside of ourselves to make us feel good. He also talks about craving attention or affirmation, the sense of wanting to be somebody, to make our mark in the world, that we try to get people's acceptance and attention. And for some people, it's even a craving to be immortal. So this is what drives the social media industry. How many likes can I get on Facebook or Instagram? It's what drives our striving to attain certain status in life, what make ourselves feel important, and even try to make our mark, perhaps put our name on a building. So we think we need something outside of ourselves to make us feel accepted, acknowledged, that we're here, that we're somebody. And then he also talks about a craving to feel nothing. And it's kind of a way that we turn away from ourselves, this craving to feel nothing. And so it can, I think of it as like the simplest form of it for me is like I can relate to a time when I felt incredibly embarrassed, maybe ashamed by something either I did or somebody said. And I just have that feeling like I just want to disappear. Like I just wish I wasn't here right now and I could totally disappear. So this craving to not feel anything. It can go up to very extreme behaviors. People who do a lot of high risk lifestyle behaviors where they're risking death all the time. And it can also include suicidal self-loathing. So it's the craving for non-existence. There's so many ways that we try to lose ourselves in an attempt to not feel anything. If we don't feel anything, we think we can help keep ourselves from getting hurt. But this desire to disconnect distances us from our own hearts and from other people. And it keeps us from loving ourselves and accepting ourselves just as we are. And this creates also the conditions for us to do othering, right? To be disconnected from other people in a way where it's easier for us to treat them as somehow different from us and often less than us. I think it's part of what fuels racism and a lot of other problems that we have in the world. It's you know, disconnecting and not wanting to feel anything about ourselves or others, and it limits how we relate to other people, but is all also about all sentient beings, not just human beings, but it can impact how we relate to animals. It can even impact how we relate to our environment, this disconnection and not wanting to feel anything. On a practical level, how do we begin to work with these ideas of the causes of suffering? When we're having suffering, we can consider the question for ourselves, what is causing my suffering? We can bring awareness to it, notice what's happening, and then learn to let go of our craving or clinging around something. So the example I like to use, it's easy for me to use, is driving in traffic, because this brings up suffering for me very easily. I have a very deep pattern around this. Luckily, since the pandemic, I haven't had to drive as much as I used to, but it still happens. I still drive and I'll get stuck in traffic. And before I know it, I'm suffering. So I always try to notice first, like what's going on for me? Like when I'm realizing like, oh man, I'm really tense about this. I'll just try to notice what's happening in my body. So I bring awareness into my body. Maybe I'm gripping the steering wheel really tightly. Maybe I've got a tight jaw or a tense stomach. It could be that I just feel flushed or I can tell that I have like bad thoughts about the other drivers. So just noticing what's happening right here in my body. And I can usually, you know, figure out like, okay, what's going on? I'm frustrated about this traffic. And then I have to, you know, really look at what's driving that? Why am I frustrated about this traffic? And I can get down to it's my desire or my craving in this case, you know, we're trying to understand craving. It's my craving to have things move faster, right? I feel like somehow everything should be going more smoothly and not, I shouldn't be held up. So I cling to this idea of the way something should be, that this traffic should be moving faster. And my practice helps me see that the traffic is what it is, right? It's moving at this pace and I can't control that. And so what I can control is this, I can let go of my need for or my desire to have everything move faster. Recognizing that in wishing it to be different or craving a faster traffic flow, I'm creating suffering for myself. So it's looking at and knowing that suffering is there. It's not something out there. I get to call it what it actually is. This is happening. The traffic isn't creating my suffering. I am, by my clinging to a certain expectation about it. Another cause of suffering that the Buddha mentions is ignorance. Ignorance relates to not seeing the world as it actually is. So the Buddha taught that before we learn to settle the mind and develop the capacity for mental concentration and insight, our minds are essentially obscured with a lot of beliefs and attitudes, preconceived notions, as well as karmic imprints from many lifetimes. And that this conditioning makes us unable to grasp the true nature of things. So greed and envy and hatred and anger, these all result from this ignorance that we have, not understanding and seeing the world as it actually is. Ignorance is also part of what causes us to see things as permanent and enduring, when actually we know that things, or we're taught by the Buddha, that things are impermanent. They're constantly changing and in flux and in flow. And as we already discussed, when we cling to the wanting things to be permanent, this is part of the ignorance that we experience that causes suffering. With mindfulness practice, we can begin to look at the nature of our desires or cravings. What are we holding on to? What are we pushing away? And also, where may our understanding be clouded or distorted by strong emotions, anger, hatred, jealousy, fear? Are we compulsively chasing after that next great thing that will bring us happiness? Can we see how our own response to people or experiences may be adding suffering on top of a situation? And in meditation, can we gently notice if we're holding tight to an idea or an opinion or expectation of how something or someone should be? With practice, we can learn to see more deeply into our experience and perhaps even below our craving. As we settle the mind, more can be revealed to us about suffering and its causes. The third noble truth is the cessation of suffering. The Buddha teaches us to notice that suffering can lessen and ultimately cease. So in the analogy of the diagnosis, this is him telling us there is a treatment we can use to heal our hearts. This truth says to us, take notice. There's a way to work with this suffering, and this has to do with bringing awareness to the mind's conditioning. When we take care to really look at and understand suffering, its causes and its causes, we can work through it to the other side. We can experience the lessening of suffering. So bringing awareness into stress or discomfort or pain, it changes our relationship to it. When we bring awareness to whatever is painful or difficult, we shift from being lost in the suffering to noticing what exactly is going on. This awareness of the suffering versus being lost in it allows us to lessen its hold on us, and it makes space for a more skillful response. So in my traffic example, once I could see what was happening, I could let go of the folly of my expectation that the traffic should move faster. I could abandon that cause of my suffering or craving, and I could actually see it decrease. Now, the complete cessation of suffering, which is what the Buddha experienced, is the result of deep practice that eliminates and frees us from cravings and root ignorance. It helps to strip away the layers of greed and hatred and ignorance and uncover or set free our true nature. The Buddha did this in his lifetime. And the great news is that he taught us that we are all capable of this. We all have the potential to reach the end of suffering. On a practical level, we want to work with bringing awareness to suffering and our reactivity around it. Can we develop our practice to the point where in our day-to-day lives, we gradually learn to not pick up or get tangled up in the attitudes and behaviors that lead us to suffering? Insight teacher Joseph Goldstein, who's at Insight Meditation Society on the East Coast, he encourages us to notice what wanting feels like, and then what it feels like when wanting passes, as it will, because we know that everything's impermanent. So he stresses the importance of recognizing both wanting and when wanting has passed, to know both of these. And this is really what the third noble truth is all about. Having an awareness of how these things can pass, how suffering can lessen. So with this awareness, we learn to lessen suffering. And this is the deep work of our practice. And it leads us to the fourth noble truth, the path to the end of suffering. The fourth noble truth charts the method for attaining the lessening of suffering, known as the Noble Eightfold Path. And the Buddha's teaching on this was to develop the path. Here the Buddha gives us instructions, or the prescription, for how to lessen and ultimately end suffering. How through practice we can uncover and uproot the layers of craving, greed, and ignorance, and reach freedom from suffering. The steps of the Noble Eightfold Path are wise understanding, wise thought, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. We'll be covering those over the next 3 weeks and how we can work with these practices to make progress on this path. So here we are in this time of great suffering in the world, and we can use these ancient teachings to help heal our own hearts and to bring care and healing into the world. Gil Fronsdale says that we can practice in a grounded way, a wise way, to understand how we can move through suffering toward a better future. So thank you for your attention to the first noble, or the four noble truths. And we have some time where we can do.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.